Hi everyone, welcome to episode 14 of Poet Voice. So sadly, this is the final episode of Poet Voice, and on today's episode, I want to talk about endings. It's the ending of my writer in residence here at Sheridan. I have one more week of office hours, and we just had the final ampersand review reading of the year. We had a really beautiful poetry salon, and I had the chance to read with Therese Mason-Pierre and Farah Ghafoor. It was a really incredible event, and I'm really honored that I had the chance to read some new work as well as some poems from my book, and to hear the open mic readers one last time. I feel like this reading encapsulated my time at Sheridan. There was a lot of love in the room. There was a lot of creativity and support. One of the open micers read for the first time ever, which was really beautiful to see. Farah read some incredible work, as did Therese, and it was just really amazing to be part of this incredible, welcoming, and supportive community. I've been really blown away by the fact that, you know, creative writing and publishing professors have a full course load. They're also supervising the ampersand review interns. They're also publishing a journal. They often stick around until 8 or 9 at night between the ampersand review reading series, the writing series, the issue 8 launch, the festival in the fall. The professors really go above and beyond. And I mean, this is in addition to all the grading they have, all the lectures that they have. So I'm just really in awe of the professors in the creative writing and publishing program who are truly devoted to the ampersand review, to their students, and they've really modeled for me what it sort of means to be in community and be sort of someone that emerging writers can look up to. So thank you, Tally, for your warmth and for inviting me to be part of the ampersand review. From the interview that we did in the fall to inviting me to curate the spring readings, to all your support along the way, I'm really grateful. Thank you to Paul for hosting all the readings, hosting the open mic with your sense of humor, your generosity, and for all the excellent conversations driving me back to Toronto so I didn't have to take the GO train so late at night. I think that the Toronto literary scene is really lucky to have you. Thank you to Owen for your integrity and modeling what it means to show up for students. You've also been someone that I've looked up to, and I'm really glad that we were able to work together this year. Thank you to the interns, to Rochelle and Adriana in the fall, and Matt and Philomena in the spring. You guys have just been incredible, and I'm really impressed by all your hard work, all your ability to bring people together, and all the programs just ran so smoothly. So thank you so much for that. Thank you to Glenn for posting the podcast and helping with any technical issues. Thank you to all the professors who had me in your classrooms. I had a really great time talking about how to use poetic tools in short fiction or how to apply for grant applications, the Giller Prize controversy. I'm really grateful for all the professors that had me in your classrooms and allowed me to chat with students a little bit. Thank you to the students for your vulnerability, for asking thoughtful questions that made me consider poetry in new ways, whether it was at the Ampersand Review Q&A or in my office hours, over email. I'm so proud of the poems that you've written, your successes, whether it was a publication of a poem or sending your work out for the first time, applying for MFA programs, or reading a poem at the Ampersand Review open mic for the first time. Your voice is important, and thank you for sharing it with me and sharing it with all of us. Serving as the writer in residence has truly been the highlight of my career. I don't think I'll have an opportunity like this again in such a warm and welcoming community And having the opportunity to just focus on my writing for a year, it's truly been a gift. It's incredibly hard to say goodbye. This is also especially true because I recently learned that I'm the final writer in residence due to the program cuts that many students and faculty have been fighting so hard against. We recently learned that another writer won't get to experience this incredible community at Sheridan. So thank you to the students who organized the Save Creative Writing and Publishing social media campaign. I remain hopeful that this is not the end of creative writing at Sheridan, and this is not the end of the community that you have built. So I'm not saying a full goodbye. This is not a complete goodbye. I'm really excited to share that I'll be teaching the second half of Professor Vermeersch's Poetry and Poetics class this summer. So thank you to Paul for thinking of me, and thank you to Gabe for making it happen. I'll be hanging on a little longer, and hopefully I'll be seeing some of you in that class, and if not that class, maybe a poetry reading in Toronto, and if you ever see me, come say hi. So I do want to talk a little bit about ending a poem, to end with some craft discussion and some discussion of poetry. At the Ampersand Review reading series, I was really inspired by Therese's comment that she sort of made a self-deprecating joke, but it was actually really brilliant. She said that when she doesn't know how to end a poem, she just starts listing various images. And of course, I'm someone who loves imagery. I love a list. And what she said really resonated with me because when I don't know how to end a poem, I'll do a number of things. And I think I do something similar, which is ending in imagery can be a really powerful way to end a poem. So I want to talk about a few maybe techniques or tactics for when you don't know how to end a poem. And maybe some of them will give us some wisdom when we don't know how to end the creative writing and publishing program, or we don't know how to end the Sheridan writer in residency. Maybe this will give us some guidance. So when I was editing Crying Dress, I also realized that a lot of my poems end in a similar way. And this becomes evident when you do a reading and you have to select 8 or 9 poems to read, you start noticing, wait, all these poems are doing something similar. They're doing a similar movement towards the end of the poem. So in Crying Dress, this tick or tendency was to end with a rhyme. Even if there's not a consistent rhyme scheme throughout the poem, even if there's just sort of a vague or internal rhyme sort of trailing throughout the poem, I feel like ending with an end rhyme gives a feeling of satisfaction, as though the pieces are clicking into place. So this is a tactic that I'll do quite often. I noticed it in the book, that I was doing a similar move towards the end of the poem where certainly there was some internal rhyme and some rhyme earlier in the piece, but to really hammer home the point, I would often end with that really satisfying end rhyme. So I know rhyme isn't for everyone, but that is definitely one technique that I've used and that I've become hyper-conscious of. So I don't think I'll be using it quite so frequently in the future, but the rhyme or some element of musicality is definitely one way that you can go. When I was at Iowa for my MFA in poetry, a lot of my classmates ended their poems with repetition or by repeating a line or a word. And there was some debate whether this was a cop-out or a shortcut to an ending. Is the poem doing anything new by simply repeating the last 2 lines? I think of the Gertrude Stein quote that I shared in the Ampersand Review workshop a few weeks ago. There is no such thing as repetition, only insistence. So maybe by repeating a phrase or a line earlier in the poem, maybe this use of repetition is insisting on itself and sort of emphasizing the one line that you want readers to, that you want to stay with readers. Speaking of that workshop, if your poem features a clearly established pattern or element of repetition, sometimes breaking that pattern can also offer a way to end a poem. So instead of thinking of an ending as trying to tie up all the loose ends and packaging everything in a neat box, maybe we can start to think of ending a poem as a doorway to lead the reader somewhere new. Or if not a doorway, a window that they can open the window and sort of poke their heads out and see where the sun is. While I was researching for this podcast, I came across an article on ListHub written by the American poet Emily Skeja. So she has a great essay called 50 Ways to End a Poem. And there was definitely some overlap with some of the techniques that I've already discussed, but I wanted to share a few highlights with you as well. So here are some highlights from Emily's essay. Cut yourself off. Perhaps you've already written the real ending and it's a few lines up. So this is a frequent sort of editorial note that I've definitely received and probably given to others, that the ending that you have is not the true ending. You actually ended the poem 4 lines earlier and you simply need to chop off the last 4 lines. I think that's really great advice. She also says, end by going back to the beginning. So you can circle back to an image, replicate your syntax, repeat a thesis, return to the start of the story. The one caveat to this is maybe I sometimes see when poets will end with a word and that word becomes the title. Sometimes maybe that's a little too much coming full circle, but otherwise I think that this is solid advice. She says you can leave something out, end mysteriously, or give a little hint and invite the reader to figure it out. I definitely love ending mysteriously and not spelling it out. And I think this is similar to ending with an image, but yeah, inviting mystery or a lack of knowing into the poem. Another way to end a poem is to find what you said you were looking for, say you'll keep looking, or announce that you've given up looking. She says you can write 2 endings and let the reader pick their favorite, so kind of choose your own adventure poem. She says, in a tribute to Marcaeus, have the last line of the poem carried away by ants. Or be like Rilke and suddenly confront your reader with, quote, you must change your life. Yeah, I think making a direct address to the reader, it's not a tool that you can do in every single poem. I think it needs to be used sparingly, but it's definitely one possibility. She also says you can undermine yourself. Go proofrock and say, that wasn't what you meant at all. Yeah, you can definitely undermine what you said previously in the poem. We certainly contain multitudes, so there's no reason why you can't argue with yourself or take the opposite approach as you close the poem. She also says, refuse to end, resist closure, tell your reader it's a lifelong poem project and threaten that you'll see them around. So I think this is sort of the tactic that I'm taking in leaving Sheridan / hanging around. I'm resisting this ending. I'm refusing to leave, and I'll be sticking around in some realm as I teach the last part of Paul's class this summer, and as you may run into me in some readings or events around the GTA. I want to now read a poem by the poet John Keane. This is a poem called Gift, and it's in Keane's Collected Poems that just came out, or Selected Poems, which is called Punks. And I really like this poem because it's not only a list poem, not only a repetition poem, but I think it also is a poem about poetry. It's a poem that shows us maybe what a poem can leave with the reader, or what a poem can gift to the reader. And I want to leave it as a parting gift for all the listeners of Poet Voice, past, present, future. So this is Gift by John Keane. Dear blank, I enclose 20 statements to read in lieu of a lyric. I enclose a poetics, by which you can read an ethics. I enclose wit, which is another way of saying seeing. I enclose the spirit of literature and the potential of culture. I enclose space, time, and variations on geometry. I enclose a major and minor key. I enclose a mirror in the form of rhyme. I enclose a ship, but you have to accept the penman with it. I enclose a radical simplicity, which could be taken or mistaken as art. I enclose a hidden shibboleth, which you don't need to figure it all out. I enclose politics and ideology, like anyone who writes or utters a word of any language. I enclose as many personae, by which I mean Johns, as you can divine from these lines. I enclose the spine of a discourse someone else might build on. I enclose glimpses of society and the nature of inquiry. I enclose a conceptual register, as well as hints as to what might come after. I enclose laughter and sorrow by their absence. I enclose 20 or more potential anagrams, which you might find a useful diversion from your own work. I enclose nothing that might be taken as an overriding thesis about poetry. I enclose 20 comments, which you might take in lieu of a signature. I enclose this final sentence, a palinode, should you or I want to take it all back. So that was Gift by John Keane. And I think that final line sort of gives the poet a way out. And I think that final line sort of gives us a place to land on, to end on for now. Should I want to take it all back? Or should we want to contradict ourselves? Or should we want to revisit the poem, which is maybe the poem we're writing, or maybe the poem of our lives that we're continuing to write? So thank you all again for listening, for reading with me, for thinking with me, and sharing with me your beautiful, beautiful poems.